Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The Padres Hot Tub is brought to you by the Padres Hot Tub Patreon community, where folks are coming together and talking baseball, talking anything, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 a year, 366 on leap years. And Chris, the community continues to grow. I wanted to start today's ad by saying thanks to Padres Obsessed Wes, to Zire, and to Mark Bernatz, new patrons over the last 48 hours. I also want to thank Ryan for upping his pledge and moving up a level in the community. We're getting close to spring training, Chris. It's almost time. The community's growing.
And folks, I can't tell you how good it feels just to support something that you enjoy, to help keep something going that you gained something from. You know, it's a cost benefit. You get access to the Discord, amazing community that, I have enjoyed a great deal since leaving the Twitter. Maybe you can too.
You know, it's a fair point. I've stopped going to Twitter. Twitter's gotten funky and like I'll check it, but I'm not spending the time on that platform that I used to. And one of the big reasons why is I know that when something cool happens in baseball, our Padres Hot Tub community is talking about it. When there's an amazing show that's on, our Padres Hot Tub community is talking about it in the Crossing Streams feed. And I just want to throw in as an addition, are you thinking about going to Mexico City for the Padres series down in La Ciudad de México? Well, our Padres Hot Tub Patreon community is currently trip planning. They're booking Airbnbs. They're figuring out the best flights. They're figuring out a way to go down there and do it together. It might be worth the cost of the Discord just to get in there and help plan your trip. So it's so easy to do. Just go to patreon.com/PadresHotTub, patreon.com/PadresHotTub. Our opening area, $5 a month, $5 a month. It's barely a trip to the 7-Eleven. We get to higher levels as well, where you get even more interactivity. We'll be taking you to ball games during the Padres season, taking you out and even more. So check it out, patreon.com/PadresHotTub. Welcome to the Padres Hot Tub, everybody. Craig Elston, Chris Reed, back together January 23rd. And Chris, we've got a special guest tonight. I am so excited.
Man.
We are welcoming in one of the legends of our Patreon community, the great John Prokota. You last heard him on the show on group therapies. You heard him when I was off in Zion for a week. And now you're hearing him right here before even Valentine's Day. Prokota, what's happening, brother?
How much? How are you guys doing?
I'm waiting for some baseball.
Yeah, waiting for some baseball is right. We're less than a month away? About a month away?
From pitchers and catchers reporting, we're now just a scarce 22 days.
Away from hearing vague news about people throwing baseballs, not being able to watch them, but seeing that something's happening. That sounds nice.
Yeah, Louis Campusano being grumpy about the wrong towels in the clubhouse.
All of these stories waiting to be told. Some effusive Bob Scanlon praise of something he's seen on a backfield, you know? I can't wait for all of these little nuggets to drop. Speaking of nuggets, John Prokota wearing an absolutely delicious Denver Nuggets Throwback pullover, absolutely sick, my friend. Joining us from Colorado, we've got a three-location podcast today from San Diego, the City of Angels, and from Denver as well. Are you specifically in Denver, John?
I'm in Aurora, just outside of Denver, right on the medical school campus. So just a stone's throw from Denver.
Outstanding. Now that we've geolocated everyone, let's get into the show. On today's show, you already saw the topic of the podcast. We're going to really dig in, especially in the second half of the podcast, to the World Baseball Classic. I think the World Baseball Classic is something that baseball fans are just not thinking about right now. And then all of a sudden, it's going to be right in the middle of their head, because March 8th, there's going to be games, live fire, World Baseball Classic action. By March 21st, we've got a team celebrating. We've got a country celebrating. And then like a week later, we'll be into the Major League Baseball season. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to dig into, as usual, our Padre Kvetch of the Week from the Padres Discord, which is back-end rotation talk. Going to get into all of that and suss it out all out. But first, the trade that was, which is the trade that was not. Pablo Lopez, we've heard about him in regards to the Padres for a while. Controllable arm, Miami Marlins, Skip Schumacher, needs to get some bats in town. Pablo's on the move. Indeed, he was moved this past weekend to the Minnesota Twins in exchange for the American League batting champion from last year, Luis Arraez, who I think has been on my fantasy team 3 years in a row. That was not all. Actually, the Twins got Jose Salas and Byron Churio, Salas in particular, one of the top prospects, out of the Marlins organization, all in exchange for Luis Arraez. So, Chris, I'll start with you, and then John, I'd really like your thoughts. This is a guy that we've heard talked about a lot, possibly as part of a Ha-Sung Kim or even a Jake Cronenworth trade. If you could have taken this trade, Chris, and just subbed out Arraez and subbed in Cronenworth, would this have been a good trade for the Padres to have made?
Not exactly. Only because I think the Padres would have wanted to get an additional young pitcher. But it's a pretty appealing trade. Pablo Lopez has been really good the past 2 years. First half of last year, he was incredible. The Twins kind of are in a similar situation than as the Padres, in that they have a solid three, but then their pitching depth got a little murky, and they had solid depth throughout their lineup, especially in the outfield. So they shed, you know, from a place of depth, from a place of having extra, and you know, get a really solid guy in Lopez, and then a couple of solid prospects in return. It would have been really fun to have gotten Salas brothers both in the Padres system playing at the same time. That's for sure.
Yeah, right. A good point. Jose Salas, brother of Ethan Salas, who we talked about last week, Venezuelan catcher, rookie bonus. What's more important right now, John, for this Padres team as they get ready to assemble? Having the lineup they've got, including Jake the Rake, or having a fourth starter that you could like write in 175 innings guaranteed?
I'd say that we're definitely better, in my opinion, this year with Pablo Lopez than we are with Cronenworth this year. This year, I'd rather have a fourth starter. I'd rather have insurance against any injuries. I'd rather have a guy that you can plug in that game three in the event that somebody is either hurt or not performing to the level that they would expect in the playoffs, and not make it so that we have, you know, one, two hot starters and then just bullpen the rest of the way. And we've seen what that can do. I would rather have the depth this year than Cronenworth.
Wow. Okay. I'll break the tie. But I'm going to break the tie in a weak fashion. I mean, I'm okay with them not having made this trade. And I agree with Chris. I don't think they would have made it exactly the same way. And that's probably what prevents them. However, the fact that Skip Schumacher is the Marlins manager, I think Jake Cronenworth gets this trade done in some form or fashion. I think if Jake Cronenworth is in the deal, that's enough for Skip. That's enough for the Marlins. Maybe they put in a right-handed hitting first base type, right, instead of a prospect Maybe it's something more big league positive that could step in right away. But I think this is a deal the Padres could have made. Whether they should have made it or not is going to be something we're going to figure out down the line. But go ahead, John.
So Cronenworth the last 2 years has been worth 4.1 F4 both of the last 2 years. I don't know if you guys have seen, but they've like recently all the prognostication sites have come out with like their predicted wars for everybody over the next year. And they, all the Fangraphs ones plugged in the fact that they think Cronenworth's probably going to stick at first base. And this has been Craig's argument for a long time, is how well does Cronenworth's assets like convert to a first baseman? And after they plug those in, so they think he's going to be basically the exact same hitter as he was last year, and their prognostication is that he's going to go from a 4-point war player last year to being about a 2.5 war player this next year just by moving his position. So his positional value went way down, and that tanked his overall value from their assessment. So you're talking about a 1.6, you know, at least guess of a drop-off just by changing his position. Whether that's accurate or not with the shift rules, I don't know. But that is it's a significant thing for them to guess, I think.
Chris?
I'm not sure Jake is gonna get much better. I don't want to use like the regression word or anything, but statistically, he's a little past prime. He was an old rookie. I'm you know, comparatively, these are all young men, according you know, compared to you and I, at least, Craig. So I don't want to say like he's like, I don't want to say Cronenworth's washed up or anything. But I'm not sure we're going to see another gear from him. I think he was one of the guys on our team that really suffered from the balls changing. You know, he lost his opposite field power that he had kind of found, and it left him a pool guy to get home runs. And he still got quite a few. I think he got 17 last year or whatever it was. So the guy has pop in his bat that Arias doesn't have. I think Cronenworth would have been a great fit on the Marlins. But, you know, we don't know if he was even brought up in the conversation. The Padres are said to be quite attached to him. The thing is, with the shift, defense on the first base position becomes a premium that it hasn't been in years before. And he has a chance to win a gold glove there, playing a full season at first base. So I'm not going to complain about having Jake Cronenworth on the team, but I'm also not sure we're going to see another gear from him.
Yeah. And that's where you really, when we did the John, the end of the season, should you trade Jake Cronenworth podcast? That's why I kind of settled on that uncomfortable spot of like, this is probably the ideal time to trade him. There probably will never be a time where he has the combination of affordability, control, and perceived value. Because as soon as he's a 18 home run first baseman, you know, unless he fields like Wally Joyner, you know, hitting like Wally Joyner in 2023 at first base is probably not good enough anymore. So, you know, it's a sticky wicket. I think we are running in, John, to this spot where you start to get into the non-statistical areas of this club thinks Jake Cronenworth is a leader. This club feels Jake, you know, burn the ships. All of that, the hit against the Dodgers, and there becomes a prestige value almost in keeping him. And you simply cannot quantify that.
That's what they told me about Hosmer, though. We can't quantify the leadership that Cronenworth's going to give. I don't know. I do know that there's more data available nowadays than there was before the shift was implemented. So there's going to be defensive value changes, I think, now that the shift is prohibited. How much value does a first baseman have? Does Cronenworth get an extra couple feet off of first base because he's faster? He's a right-handed glove, and you only have the few amount of throw-over, so would you rather have that left-handed first baseman? I really just don't know the answers to these like defensive valuations of first baseman post-shift. I don't know. Do I believe that the Padres are probably out in front of everybody else in terms of this research and who has the best valuations? No, I don't.
No.
No, they're right. Probably just like, I think they're probably just like, let's go for shortstops. And that's like basically how, you know, the extent of their thought on it. But I don't know. You kind of have to see it playing. I think it is like a little bit of a wild, wild west in terms of what the actual value is of a first baseman. And it might be a lot, but gun to my head, I would say it probably isn't as much as maybe we're valuing him at that position.
Yeah, I wonder if there's another trade out there that lines up the way this trade would have for the San Diego Padres, because it did seem like it was pretty much a nice fit. And if I'd like to make a narrative that is unprovable, you know, and I could just toss it out on the show, I'd say that Skip Schumacher really wanted Cronenworth and the Padres were pushing Kim as the replacement for Cronenworth, and that just didn't fly. You know, compared to Luis Arraez, because look, Luis Arraez, you know, I'm thinking back, Chris, to when we did our fan survey last week and talking about favorite players in baseball. And I said, it's whoever does well for my fantasy team, which is a cynical but true answer. But Luis Arraez reminds me of Tony Gwynn. You know, he's a left-handed line drive bat, high average, low power, all fields, take it where it's played. You know, and that's appealing to a Gwynn disciple or a Gwynn, acolyte. So I get the excitement from Miami standpoint. Oh, AL batting champ. You know, maybe now we got the NL batting champ. The other funny thing is, though, Chris, the Marlins are doing the Padres minus one on the defensive spectrum. They're collecting every second baseman they can collect.
Yeah, poor. But you saw that Jazz Chisholm's fired up, ready to go win some gold gloves in center field. He's going to have to get past my guy, Trent Grisham. Don't think he's going to do it. You know, this trade, I'm not sure, you know, just looking at it from the different team's perspective, I think the Twins do great. I think the Marlins made a choice. It's kind of interesting for their lineup. I don't know how well served they are by having, a batting average first guy at the top of it. I may sound a bit like an old man screaming at the clouds here, but I still believe a hitter like him has a huge place in major leagues. And I think if Arraez was at the top of the Padres lineup, you're talking about something pretty darn special. But over in Florida, they don't have any pop behind him. There's not a ton of protection. There's no proven, you know, five-star guy. Jazz is great. He's learned, you know, he steals a lot of bases. He has some power, but, you know, he's still fresh and he hasn't proven himself to be, the guy who carries a team. So the Marlins keep doing some interesting things, and maybe they snuck one away from us here. I don't feel like I did when the Cardinals got Paul Goldschmidt. You know, when there was just an obvious robbery occurring. I think it'll work out for both teams, but I do wonder how much it's going to help the Marlins.
Yeah, great call. I don't know. I think it helps the Twins. I think it definitely helps the Twins. Pablo Lopez steps in, and I think he's good. And now they're talking about Maeda as their five.
Gosh.
Or maybe their Nick Martinez swing coming back off injury. And, you know, frankly, the Twins didn't have enough starting pitching. You know, like when Joe Ryan is your number one, you don't have enough starting pitching to be a true contender in the American League. But Pablo Lopez, you know, gets you a step closer. They made a trade. They added a little Byron Buxton depth. So I like what the Twins are doing for the Marlins. Hey, you know, Skip wants a guy to hit 320 that he can gush about every day in pregame. That Arraez, he's setting the tone. He's setting the tone. He comes to play. He brings a lunch pail and a hard hat out to whatever we're now calling the Globe Life or whatever. What do they call? I don't even remember. Lone Depot? Is it Lone Depot?
I honestly don't remember.
Corporate sponsor in insert here. 5-year deal.
It's called stadium. Dozens of people. Dozens.
All right, let's transition here, because obviously we're talking about the Pablo Lopez trade within the context of what do the Padres need, right? And I, I just want to reiterate, and Prakota, I feel like I'm vibing with you here. You tell me if I'm wrong, but I do want to reiterate, the Padres are built to win this year. The Padres are built to be a tremendous winning team right now, today, this year. No changes, no alterations, no notes. Send it to print. The Padres are going to be a really, really good team. They've got a ton of things going for them this season. John, I kind of feel like there's a natural tendency, especially within a community like ours, that it's siloed somewhat, right? All of our thoughts are bouncing off the walls against one another. And we're always going to look for every imperfection in the gem in order to make it a more perfect thing. So the question I'm leading up to is, do the Padres really have to make a trade or a signing? Do they have to add another starter before the season begins?
Before the season begins, I do not think that they have to make any additions at all, and I think that we'd be a good team. I think that where it comes in terms of a little bit of anxiety towards valuations is that in the last two or three trade deadline deals, acquiring starting pitching has been very, very expensive, right? So, like, we have enough pitching, starting pitching, to last us half a season for sure. We do. But if we are put in the position where we have to acquire starting pitching, are we with our farm system going to be able to do that? If we're in that position. And so there is a little bit of anxiety saying, well, if we don't buy it now, we're going to be overpaying later. There is a added benefit of at least knowing what you need when it's like time to trade for those assets, right? So maybe we need starting pitching. What if everybody's healthy the whole time? Maybe we don't need starting pitching. Maybe what happens is there's an injury in the outfield and we really need an outfielder. So we're paying for that additional knowledge with the extra prospect capital. Knowing how high ceiling we normally go in terms of our prospect evaluations, probably going to be another Estuary Ruiz, right? I think that there probably will be somebody that pops up out of nowhere and is suddenly very valuable and that we're not even taking into account right now that would allow us to afford something that we don't even know that we're looking for in the future. So I do not think that we necessarily need something. I think that there is a little bit of valuation that says, let's pay for the starting pitching now because later we might not be able to afford it. That's both of those are fair arguments to me.
Well, I would point out that AJ Preller also has a better track record of trading for starting pitching in the off season. His deadline deals to shore up the rotation, there's been some big misses, you know, that weren't necessarily his fault. I'll defend the Clevinger deal in the Discord all the live long day, but when it comes down to it, it didn't work out so well. Even having seen how Clevinger was performing that whole season. And there's been a couple others, whereas Musgrove, off-season acquisition, Snell, Darvish, even you can go to Zach Davies as an off-season acquisition that worked out pretty well.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It just seems once the deadline gets on us, AJ tends to, I don't know, be a little more erratic. Maybe he's sleeping instead of 1 hour a night, he's sleeping 15 minutes that night,
right?
Whatever it is. So yeah, they get more expensive as the deadline approaches, and the track record isn't quite as good.
And with that said, the Padres made a huge choice. And I just want to keep going back to this. The Padres made a gigantic choice this offseason. They had, clearly, assets to use. They had money to spend. And they spent $280 million on Xander Bogaerts. They brought in another hitter. They brought in another elite-level, all-star-level hitter to this lineup. And to me, what we're kind of missing on that is opportunity cost. Like, the club knows what they have in terms of their pitching. The club knows what they have in terms of their depth. And when this club's baseball operations brain trust got together and said, what's the thing, right? First, they tried to get Trey Turner. Then they tried to get Aaron Judge. And they wound up getting Xander Bogaerts. So to me, this is saying that the Padres believed that they needed more offense in their lineup. They needed more consistent hitting in their lineup in order to be a dominant team, not that they needed a dominant fourth starter in order to be a dominant team.
Well, yeah. Last year, the team came into the season incredibly strong in the pitching department, you know, almost seven deep with good starting pitchers, if you consider Clevinger was due back in a few months from his Tommy John. And, you know, they came in, you know, with Trace Thompson on the roster. You know, they picked up Sergio Alcantara a couple weeks into the season. The depth in the lineup wasn't there. This year, it's kind of flipped. You know, we're looking at a potentially historically good offense that might do things in Petco Park that we've never seen. And the questions are all at the back of the rotation.
Yeah, and John, go ahead.
If you're going to invest, I would rather invest in position players. There's it's a more conservative investment to invest in a position player.
Yes.
However, over the course of a single season, the more conservative investment is pitching depth, because when you run out of pitching depth, things fall off a cliff. So you got to balance those two things. On a long-term contract, I would prefer myself to go position player, which is what we did. But if we're not able to get at least some kind of investment in pitching, then that's the best way to ruin a good team, is to not have enough pitching. If you don't have enough second base quality, you can replace that. But if you don't have enough pitching, you run out quick and your team tanks. So understand that anxiety of us not having enough pitching depth. And I mean, we can go into that further, but in terms of long-term contract, Brett Honeywell was a top prospect. How long he missed between pitching appearances in the minors or the majors? So just one pitch to another. How many days do you think he missed?
I mean, 600 days.
Yeah, that's why I would go 600, 700.
1,298 days.
Dear God.
That's about as long as...
If you make an investment and they are gone for 1,298 days and four surgeries later, then it's just broken, right? That never happens to position players. At least they fail because they're bad, you know? And sometimes that happens. But you're not having to deal with them being bad or injuries, at least not for that, you know, length of time. Oh, I agree with the long-term investment. I also agree with the anxiety about not having enough pitching depth.
John, you said it. That's the guy we're relying on. And I'll say it. The known assets are not there. Like, looking at it right now, I do think somebody's going to get hurt. I do think somebody's going to strain something. All these guys are operating under new rules. They're going to be facing new teams. They're going to be in new ballparks. It's 162 game grueling season. I think somebody's going to get hurt, and I really hope it's not one of our proven three. And when you look at it, that's what we've got. We've got three that are proven. Nick Martinez made 10 starts last year. The Padres want him to double that, but they also put it into his contract that he has all these incentives if he hits relief appearance marks. So they obviously are not, you know, certain that's going to happen. It doesn't add up, and they're relying on finding a 5 and a 6. If Lugo's your 7, they're relying on finding these guys in spring training. They could do it. You know, there's guys there that could happen. The team in the past, you know, well before this era, made it a habit of finding 4 and 5 starters seemingly every year that pitched fine in Petco. So it could happen. Are there any guys that excite you, John?
Yeah. So just backing up your own point. The difference between our team and the team last year at like towards the end of our rotation, traded out Clevinger, Manaea, and Gore. And the new folks that we have to replace Clevinger, Manaea, and Gore are Lugo, who's not ever been a starting pitcher, or at least hasn't pitched for more than 101 innings, I think is his most starting pitcher innings. Jay Groom, who is a minor leaguer, and Julio Teheran, who hasn't been good in a while. So, and it's not like last year we had an embarrassment of riches. You know, we were able to have that 6-man rotation, which worked really well for us, and it was probably a boon in the playoffs when pitchers had a little bit more, you know, in the tank. We replaced Clevinger, Manaea, and Gore with Lugo, Groom, and Teheran. That's not the same. That's not a good trade at the end of your rotation.
Well, let's dig into these expectations for the back end of the rotation, because you do have to start with Nick Martinez. And I think Nick Martinez is kind of like, well, you can pick that up, turn it multiple directions, and come up with the argument that you'd like. For example, you could come up with the argument that Nick Martinez was not a very effective starting pitcher last year. He had a WHIP close to 1.5 as a starting pitcher. He was extremely effective as a reliever. So you could say he's not that effective a starter, and the Padres are putting him in a position to be his worst, you know, to put his worst foot forward, and this is going to be an ineffective use of Nick Martinez. That's one way to look at it. But another way to look at it is that Nick Martinez, coming back from Japan, coming back from having not pitched in Major League Baseball for 4 years, needed half of a season to figure out what was most effective for him and what was least effective for him, what he could do to succeed in MLB, and that he did that, and that he just happened to do that as a reliever, but that the knowledge that he picked up, John, he can now transfer back into being a more effective starting pitcher.
Yeah, so towards the end of our rotation, Nick Martinez and Seth Lugo are kind of both in a similar bucket in terms of how we're thinking of them, I think. Mostly successful relievers who are being converted into starting pitchers. But I think about them wildly differently, and I'm much more excited about Nick Martinez's transition. And let me explain why. So you put two great points. He was poor in the starting rotation, or at least not very effective in the starting rotation. He improved once he moved to the bullpen, but also once he faced batters and changed his repertoire, because he changed his repertoire a lot. So, and he was a starting pitcher. This is why this is kind of a multivariable equation for me. When he was a starting pitcher, his four-seam fastball usage was closer to like 30-40%. And it moved down by the end of September to 13%. And the reason why I say that's important is because the average and slugging percentage that he gave up on his four-seam fastball, his average against was 351, slugging 675. Everybody was Barry Bonds or better against him when he was throwing his four-seam fastball. And so he dropped that usage. He started using a sinker, which is very effective. His changeup was always very effective, and his curveball was always very effective. He increased his cutter usage, and that was more effective. So then are all his pitches going to be as effective as a starting pitcher compared to out of the bullpen? Probably not, because he's going to lose some velocity. What's more, using a four-seam fastball usually preempts you being more successful throwing your curveball. And so that's two pitches. If you want to get rid of your four-seamer, you're kind of at least reducing your usage of your curveball as well. Either way, at least he had shown success with a sinker, a changeup, and a curveball with a relatively good cutter, and just that one that wasn't successful in the big leagues, which was the four-seam fastball. So he gets to play around a little bit with that. So that's already like, well, maybe he won't settle in on his repertoire right away out of the starting pitching role, but at least he has tools to play with. So that part excites me. Already just dropping the four-seam fastball, just switching it with your sinker, basically, just even if you drop, switch it. So it's like 13% four-seam fastball, closer to 30% with the sinker. Yeah, I would imagine that he would be more successful because those six pitches were much more successful.
Let me add one more thing, Chris, which is, and this is a teaser for our WBC talk, but the last piece of WBC data that we got before starting to record today was an evening announcement by the Padres that Nick Martinez is not going to be part of the WBC team for Team USA. And his rationale, I think, should be exciting for Padres fans because Team USA was intending for him to be Nick Martinez, for him to be in the bullpen as their fireman, as their multi-inning optional reliever. And Nick Martinez said, I've promised the Padres I'm going to stretch myself out to be a full-time starter, and I can't do that if I'm being a reliever for the WBC for Team USA. And that's the reason Nick Martinez isn't pitching for Team USA. Bad for Team USA, Chris, but I think really good for the Padres. It shows that Nick knows exactly what he needs to do to get to the innings limit that he's thinking about.
Absolutely. And it just goes to why we love the guy. He is a bulldog. He's out there to help the team win. And this is him putting the team above himself. You know he wants to go out there and compete. He was probably the Padres pitcher I was most concerned about for that reason. The guy goes out there and competes. He's not going to dial it back, especially as the fireman coming in high-leverage situations. So that was great news. I'm bummed for him that he doesn't get the opportunity to represent the country, but it shows where his focus is. His focus is on, you know, keeping that rotation solid. And John, you make great points about his arsenal. You know, he's got three solid pitchers, a fourth that works. You know who does not? Seth Lugo. Seth Lugo is a two-pitch pitcher. He does not excite me in the rotation for that reason. He has a curveball that we all love. Can't wait to see that. That sounds a lot like Pierce Johnson to me. And he's also got a good fastball that doesn't get hit hard. But his sinker gets absolutely clobbered. If he's throwing his sinker as a fifth starter, the Padres are going to need that historic lineup to play up to his potential because they're going to be chasing four runs after the first three innings, a lot of games.
Well, let's talk about Lugo. Because he's right now being penciled in for the fifth starter. And John, you brought up the number 101 innings, is his career high. He did that twice, in 2017, 2018. In both of those seasons, he started some games. In 2017, he started mostly, 18 of his 19 appearances were as a starter, and it was his worst year. You know, not by FIP, close to his worst year by FIP, but by WHIP, by ERA, by hits allowed, by hits per nine. It was his worst season. And honestly, he's been pretty darn consistent and pretty good. You know, he's not an amazing relief pitcher, but he's a pretty good relief pitcher. So is this... I kind of feel like we sold Nick Martinez, John, a bill of goods when we signed him last year, going like, yeah, you're going to be a starting pitcher. Don't worry. We won't turn you into a reliever until we do. and then you're a reliever. I kind of feel like that's what they're doing with Seth Lugo this year.
I mean, I would understand that as a strategy. If our strategy is to pencil him in as the fifth or pen him in as the fifth starter, that's right. He has two pitches. He has two pitches that have been successful. They're a curveball and a four-seam fastball. Not only that, but now you're transitioning away from the pen into the rotation, wherein your four-seam fastball that you're locating at the top of the zone is slower, right? Because you're throwing more pitches. It's going to be slower. So basically, you're just a worse pitcher, and you're facing folks more than one time through a rotation or more than one time through a lineup. So not only is his four-seam fastball probably going to be slightly less effective because it's slightly slower, but folks are going to know, like, okay, he's going four-seam fastball or curveball, or he's going to give me something really juicy to hit. Either way, it's going to be successful. Not only that, but his primary pitch out of the bullpen was a curveball at 34% usage. Is he just going to be snapping off curveballs for 5, 6, 7 innings? I can't see that happening. So then he's going to rely on a slower four-seam fastball or these pitches that even out of the bullpen had slugging percentages over 500. I don't know. That all sounds like it's not going to be effective for at least more than one time through a lineup. Unless the one thing that I'm excited, like that I think could possibly happen that would be beneficial for us is that Ruben Niebla loves the changeup. Loves the changeup. And Lugo has in the past shown a decent changeup. He only threw it 18 times last year, so he seldom uses it, right? And if Niebla's allowed to like play with the shape a little bit, maybe he's able to change like his percentages and not have to be throwing like 50 curveballs per game. Or what, he'd have to have like an average, like, yeah, literally 50 curveballs per game. That's crazy. So if Niebla's allowed to play with him a little bit, then maybe he's able to get through five and be your, you know, fifth starter, five and dive kind of guy.
And that's all I'm looking for, Chris, out of the fifth starter of this team. And I'm going to get into this a little bit more as we transition, but we don't need a sixth and a third inning fifth starter on the San Diego Padres because those innings are going to be less effective than the relievers that we have lined up to take over those innings.
It was the saving grace of last season that when we were with the starters that aren't named Joe Musgrove or Yu Darvish, and the team needed 5 innings out of its bullpen, 4 innings out of its bullpen, they were able to do it. And the bullpen is fantastic. I don't want to take anything away from them. I have a lot of faith that they're going to be able to do it. It just comes down to, you know, the wear and tear of the season. It comes down to guys being unavailable. And I don't want to be relying on Seth Lugo. I mean, you look at the Houston Astros depth chart, you know, Jose Urquidy's their fifth starter. And he's a guy that might go out and pitch a sub-3 ERA. And that's what we're competing with. That's what the Padres are competing with. They want to be one of these elite 3-4 teams. They want to be slotted in to the NLCS 5 or 6 years out of the next 10. And it goes to, you don't want to give up resources that might be very important in 4 or 5 years. You know, I'm not advocating they trade Jackson Merrill or any of these coveted guys to bring in somebody. I don't think the need is that great. But I also think there's lots of franchises out there that might not want to pay a number 4 or 5, $5-6 million, and that maybe one of those guys pops up as spring training goes along and some of these younger players perform on different rosters and teams just don't want to pay that mid-level guy anymore. Just like Martinez, Lugo has those incentives in his deal for relieving and starting. You know, that I know John Heyman reported that he's going to be a starter, but John Heyman also reported that Arson Judge was going to be burning down the right field up there in San Francisco. So take it all with a grain.
That, it doesn't even have to be salt. It could be a grain of whatever particle
you gunpowder. Like whatever you guys want.
So Seth Lugo, maybe not the best option here, probably a reliever that's slightly miscast, but I do want to, and I'm kind of jumping one line on our menu here, but I do want to talk about Jay Groom because I feel like this is the one guy that some Padres fans are just poo-pooing. Earlier this past weekend when we had a lot of fourth starter, fifth starter talk in the Discord, one of the Pashas assigned to Jay Groom was he got traded for Eric Hosmer. Therefore,
I almost interrupted you to say that. Yeah. It's easy to do. Right. When he's like, the return for Eric Hosmer.
I get it. But Fernando Tatis Jr. was traded for James Shields. Okay. So let me just toss that out there. John, let me go a different direction on this. A starter who was a high first round draft pick who in the low minors pitched to some really good success, had an injury tweak, and then kind of went off the reservation for a year where there was a year that it just seemed like he couldn't put anything together. Then he puts it together and he starts to pitch at a pretty dang successful level in AAA in his age 23 season. I'm talking about Jay Groom here, John, but if I said that I was talking about Mackenzie Gore, I really wouldn't have had to change the script very much, would I?
Oh, I suppose that you wouldn't. I don't think that his stuff is as exciting as Mackenzie Gore's, but a comparison that I think that is valid and something that he could potentially follow that would be valuable to me, Eric Lauer. His velocity, Jay Groom's velocity, fell off. So he doesn't have the grade A stuff that he came out of the draft having. He's no longer a lefty that throws 95-96 consistently as a starting pitcher. What he did do last year was throw 144 innings. 144 innings in AA and AAA is something that we just don't have. You know, we don't have a lot of pitchers who successfully pitched 144 innings at the upper levels. What that means is that he is ready to contribute, and he's ready to contribute not just a few innings, but plenty of innings. And part of the reason that folks are skeptical, I think, is that each of the three stops, so AA for Boston, AA for Boston, and then AAA for us, his FIP was over 4.5. However, at all of those three stops, his ERA was about 3. It was in the low threes. So, I don't know. People have their favorite stat that they pick. And he was successful at limiting runs in environments that tended to be higher run potential environments. And he pitched 144 innings, and he's growing, and he might have Ruben Niebla as a new asset. These are all exciting things to me. Maybe he's changing his repertoire. He's still young. He's a better end of the rotation slash upper minors option than like Ryan Weathers was last year, or Reese Kinnear to me, or Julio Teheran is to me. He's at least somebody who's going to keep you in a game for 144 innings. And you need that, you know, person to be able to come up and not make you get Jake Arrieta, you know? And him being able to do that is valuable, I think.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, that volume makes me salivate. You know, and I know the tools may not parallel Mackenzie Gore, but the narrative does. You know, he's a left-handed pitcher that was a high draft pick, had his career slightly derailed. His was injury, whereas Mackenzie Gore was, you know, aliens or something. And yes. I think the narrative fits, and that's the story I want to tell myself coming into spring training.
Yes. me too. Exactly. I want to sell myself on Jay Groom. I want to get excited about Jay Groom. I want to think of Jay Groom as being the underrepresented fifth option that people just aren't talking about, that they're dismissing. And really, when I just keep hearing here's the biggest thing, John, this is my biggest thing on this. Well, you got to go get Michael Wacha. And then once you get Michael Wacha, then everything is settled now. Like, Michael Wacha's pitched to a 5 ERA in the big leagues multiple times. I'm not going to feel comfortable if you signed Michael Wacha and put us over the third tax threshold because we got Michael Wacha. Like, Jay Groom could be Michael Wacha.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can trade for maybe not the Michael Wacha, but a Michael Wacha anytime. You know, that's not an asset that you're afraid to get. If we're thinking about this over the course of a full season, then yes, I would want a Michael Wacha, a somebody who is, you know, in the background, in the periphery that can provide innings, but still have a trade deadline. And these you know, fifth starter types, while starting pitching is expensive, these fifth starter types aren't expensive. So if you need a Michael Wacha, sure, you can trade for that for, I don't know, anything. Like, we have the assets to trade for that. So Michael Wacha does not excite me either. Jay Groom at least has a potential to improve upon a Michael Wacha and be a fourth starter or a third starter. And Michael Wacha is always going to be a fifth starter.
We've mentioned, John, Craig. Yeah. Like, for me, the floor was a Pablo Lopez type guy. If you're going to trade and give somebody a rotation spot on this team, that's the floor. You know, and depending on what it takes, you do it or not.
Agreed. We already talked a little bit about Julio Teheran. I'm not going to dream on Julio Teheran. He was good years ago. He hasn't been good.
Can I give you
years.
One thing on Teheran?
Sure.
I researched it. So the one thing on Teheran that makes me just even a semblance of excited, just like I want to watch a couple starts by him in the minor or in the spring training, is that over the past 5 years, so 2021. On down for the past 5 years, his fastball has been 90 miles per hour or less the entire time. It's never on average been above 90 miles per hour, and in at least in the Mexican League he was sitting 91 to 93, and he reached up to 95. So there's at least like this fun little thing for spring training where we can be like, is he throwing 93, is he throwing 92 and having, you know, still good movement on it? And then we can dream on him. And that's all I'll say about Teheran. I don't care about him otherwise.
Fair. Fair. Good. Yeah. I'm counting zero, right? I'm putting a zero count on him. And if he goes over that, great. Reese Kinnear, I'm putting a zero count on him. I assume he won't pitch zero innings for the Padres. I assume it'll be 10 or 12 or 6. But I'm not counting on him. Michelle Baez, kind of one of those interesting, fringy... Could he have an incredible spring training and try and eke the eighth reliever job on the team? Or could he impress in El Paso? But I got to be honest, Chris, if I'm looking at Michelle Baez as anything, I'm thinking he's pitched well enough to get traded in the summer, pitched well enough to be one of those assets John was talking about that we haven't thought about yet, but burbles up to the point of being tradable. And kind of when I'm talking about the back end depth, we've got one more guy, Morahone, to talk about. But that's kind of where I lay it.
You know, Baez.
And away goes Chris.
Still what he was going to say. He was going to say, Baez.
He's coming back.
He's Baez back.
Is a man I once met in my kitchen. You're
tall.
Back, Chris.
6'7".
Like me, Michelle Baez is tall. This is what Chris Reed was about to say, I believe.
We both have a post-up game.
Mr. Reed, are you back?
I am back. I wanted to see what was said in the 4 seconds that I missed, see if I can get any more hints.
We were just commenting that you're gone. That's it.
I mean, so briefly... But that was about as much as you saw Michelle Baez last year. Like, if you blink, you missed it.
There's my guy.
And he did great. You know, you led into the most interesting one, Craig, you know, because it speaks to Padres history. You know, dude had a massive bonus as an international signing. At times, he was right up there with Mackenzie Gore in terms of the Padres prospect list. And that's Adrian Morahone. You know, can the guy get more than 3 innings? Is he Blake Snell, but even less? You know, or is there another gear we haven't seen?
Right. And John, I that's the last guy, right? I mean, I feel like we can project a really sexy, sizzling, like 50 inning relief season for Adrian Morihone, where he's just spotted in and does a great job. But that projection of taking that next step, he at some point has to do it in his career. So, or else it just won't be much of a career for Adrian Morihone. And I think the stuff is there to suggest that it should be a good career for Adrian Morihone, but the breakthrough has to come at some point. And I kind of feel like if it's not this year, it's probably not happening in San Diego.
The part that I don't understand from the zeitgeist is him being a starting pitcher that's successful for us for an entire year. For the past four seasons as a San Diego Padre, he's thrown 66 innings. That's about 16 innings per year. You're expecting him to do what? Like 150 successful innings for us?
160 innings, just a little 10x.
Yeah. Might have met Tony Stark in the offseason. You know, he might have some Iron Man shit going on.
His record is 65 1/3 in 2018. That's look up the best players in 2018. They are not similar to the best players now. That's a long time ago. It was 65 innings. So, and not only that, but you can watch him throughout the course of any pitching appearance he's ever made for the Padres, and you can see his stuff decline in a Snell fashion, but Snell times three, you know? So, like, he can dominate through one inning, and then by the time he's even through one turn of the batting order, his stuff has fallen way off, even when he's a starting pitcher. I don't know if you guys remember when he pitched in the playoffs, but they were talking about him like trying to sneak through another inning. I think he had already pitched either two or three innings and he was trying to sneak through one more inning. And his stuff had just fallen off. Like, the thing that makes him successful is that he has dominant stuff. And when his fastball is straight because he's tired, it's just, I mean, you or I would have a decent chance of hitting it. And major league hitters smoke
it. You would.
Nah, none of us are hitting him. No, he's making us poop our pants.
But we'll make fun of him when we see the numbers, even though we couldn't hit it ourselves. We'd be like, hey, Nelson Cruz could hit this.
Yeah, Nelson Cruz hit it. Yeah.
Cruz would take this way over the wall.
He's a candidate.
He's in his 40s, so that's embarrassing.
He's a candidate for Jose Ozocar's first home run if Jose Ozocar barrels one up on him.
Oh, my God. That is a fun idea. When is Jose Ozocar going to hit his first home run, and who is it going to be off, and what pitch is it going to be off? What off-speed pitch is it going to be?
It's going to be off of Brett Phillips.
Yeah.
That's true. We should make a poll on that. Everybody put a little bit of money on who he hits a home run off of.
Right.
And if he can't hit one the other way.
Right. If he just never hits a home run, we donate the pool to his family because he probably needs it at that point.
That's true. Getting back to Morihone, I don't think that he has more than one time through a lineup in him. I just don't.
I don't want to spoil our next segment, but it is pertinent to this guy. He's going to be representing Team Cuba in the WBC. If there's a guy that Padres fans, you know, can root for a breakout in the event, that's the one. You know, maybe he finds another gear there, you know, takes another step there. Maybe Niebla's been FaceTiming him. You know, they've been, you know, they've been going through grips. But maybe Zoom he's grips. The breakout.
Listen, if we dream of a Morihone breakout, you know, again, the nine and Grisham makes nine. That's just going to be my tagline for every fantastical fantasy thing is Grisham's our ninth all-star.
Don't you do that to Trent. Trent Grisham was the fourth highest vote getter in all-star getting in 2021. Don't you lump him into Adrian Morihone.
I am lumping.
Chris's retirement plan, and you're just poo-pooing Chris's retirement plan.
It's my plan to buy Santee.
Exactly. How is he supposed to afford gas and heating in California right now?
I'm trying to make a quiche, Craig. How many cars can I trade for a quiche?
When Grisham hits, now I'm the showrunner.
So blame you for that, by the way. Ever since you started saying Trent Grisham fucks is when he stopped fucking. He just...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Fell off a cliff.
Well,
he's not about that energy. He's about the cowboy life.
Yeah. Well, but however, Pakoda, when I started going around Bottle Rocket loudly proclaiming Trent Grisham is America's best hitter, he then promptly went yard off to Grom and Scherzer, like back to back. So apparently he just likes that more wholesome America's best hitter, red, white, and blue.
That's true. He did give me some very good times in both New York and San Diego. Those are like literally some of the better times of my sporting event lives in both New York and San Diego. So Trent Grisham does fuck. You're right.
Yeah, he fucks hard, man.
He doesn't like this potty mouth. Doesn't like this potty poo talk.
Trent Grisham fornicates.
He's putting boot barn purchases on his Instagram. He wants no part of these naughty words.
Trent Grisham will take a nice lady out to dinner and never call her back. All right. Let's just tag this back end rotation talk with the part that I feel, before we transition to WBC, the part that I feel Padres fans like to just leave out, which is, you can win without a great starting rotation. Like, it's not inconceivable. In fact, it's been done, and it's been done many, many times. I'd like to point, just recently, the 2015 Royals immediately jumped to mind as a team that had a friggin' mediocre-ass rotation, but had a really good lineup with really good defense and an incredible bullpen, and they won the World Series. And you don't have to go the Astros' direction. The Astros are just the most recent examples. So, John, I'll open the stage for you on this one. Is this the best bullpen the Padres have ever had? Because I kind of feel like right now you're looking at the eighth and ninth guy. It's like Tim Hill, Steven Wilson, maybe Drew Pomeranz as like the worst guy in the bullpen.
Yeah, so I have a strong opinion on this, and that is that it is the most talented opening day bullpen. However, it is not the best bullpen. That is because, so our starting bullpen, first of all, we lose a guy immediately because we have to cover whoever is the fifth starter. Right? So like we kind of have to, like, is Maury Hone part of the bullpen, or do you consider him a starter? Is he kind of like a piggyback for Lugo? Lose a guy immediately, in my opinion. So that already takes the whole roster spot off. Then after that, you have great, like very good pitchers. So you have Hader, one of the better closers of recent history. We've had a long history of good closers, but in recent history, he's one of the better closers on opening day. Then a second closer kind of in Suarez. Garcia had a very good year last year. Hill is good in his scenarios in which he usually plays, and usually he's pretty good in that. Pomeranz, I don't know. Who knows? Let's throw that one out. Wilson had a very good rookie season. One would expect him to improve even more. He made a midseason adjustment on his slider where suddenly, instead of having it drop off, he had it go more laterally. And in the middle of the season, like, he dropped his whiff percentage in exchange for poor contact. A midseason move for a rookie bullpen pitcher, it's difficult, and he did one that worked with aplomb. That was a great job by Wilson. That makes me excited for the future for him. Either way, he was a good, cheap player. And then Nabil Crismat, you know, Nabil Chrismet. He's a good end of the bullpen pitcher. However, only now in this current season, only Wilson and Hill have options. So you either have to play the injury game where you say Pomeranz is hurt again or whoever is hurt again, or you have to use Hill and Wilson as your option pitchers and then funnel in the folks that we have in the minor leagues, which we do. Like, our best, most likely to come up immediately prospects are relievers. They have a ton of options and they're cheap. You have to play that game properly, and it's kind of hard to do with injuries as opposed to options, and we don't have very many players that we can option. So, yeah, we can bring up Castillo, we can bring up Baez, we can bring up Cosgrove is now on the 40-man, Kerr is on the 40-man, Lopez is a Rule 5 draft pick who I have a feeling that AJ Preller is going to kind of Javi Guerra. Like, doesn't matter how well he does, he's probably just going to make the team for some reason. Not for some reason, it's that he has a really high K rate and a high velocity fastball as a left-handed pitcher. And getting AJ Preller not to have that like sexy item is going to be tough. And then Poppin is there. Our best prospects are also relievers. The navigation portion of our bullpen, I think, is a problem.
Does Morahone have options left?
I'd have to check on that. I don't know off the top
of my
head.
I think he's listed as the other guy that has them.
Two option years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's the last one. But yeah, Chrismet is the interesting one in that. If Chrismet struggles, and we love him, he's glorious, he's beautiful, he's, you know, a Padre. I mean, as far as the fan base goes, forever. But no options. You know, it's going to be hard to keep him on the team with the expectations the team has if he does struggle.
Nobody else is a sacrificial lamb. Nobody has the rubber arm that he has. You kind of have to keep him.
Lugo.
Yeah, it's tough to keep him the whole year, though. That's the whole thing. And you're right. Lugo offers a little bit of redundancy in that area. You know, I feel like injuries, guys, just take care of this on their own. You know, when you talk about the optionality of the bullpen, I get it. But the fact is, they've got great players that they've got no reason not to slot in to those roles and just leave them there. And really, Tim Hill is one of those guys, right? I mean, Tim Hill for three seasons now has been a super reliable lefty reliever. Come in, do his thing. You come in with runners on base, he can handle it. You know, and he's really the seventh guy. He's the seventh guy in the bullpen. So the point I just want to make about that, I mean, we can break it down, right? And we can go Hader this, Suarez that, you know, Wilson here, Pomeranz. Do we get 5 innings or 50 innings out of Drew Pomeranz? When you've got this kind of bullpen, you can five and dive once in a while, and you're fine. You're actually better off. And I get that in 2021, Jace Tingler took it to the ultimate extreme and went, hey, we'll five and dive with you, Darvish. We'll five and dive with Joe Musgrove. We'll five and dive with Blake Snell. Blake Snell, usually you have to. But and so, you know, it wound up overloading that bullpen. And you don't have a Pierce Johnson. You know, you do have Craig Stammen for whatever you want him for. But I
bullpen catcher.
That, exactly. Inspiration, you know, whatever it is. Totem, lucky totem, I think is what Craig Stammen has devolved into. Nonetheless, my point being, when you've got relievers that good, you want to assign to each one of them 60, 70, 75 innings pitched. And you can't do that and also give all 5 of your starters 150 innings pitched. At some point, I think you're taking bad starting innings away from Seth Lugo and giving good relief innings to this bullpen. And that's a great thing when you combine it with the lineup that we are going to see the Padres roll out 1-9 most of the season.
That's a great point, Craig. It's a stereotypical Padres bullpen and it's excellent. If I go to recent memory for anyone that might be better. The only one that comes to mind is the 2007 season, the Matt Holliday year, where we had Trevor Hoffman still pitching at a pretty decent, you know, level, and we had Heath Bell right behind him, just, you know, right on his heels trying to take his job. And there were a lot of guys that were good on that bullpen. I think of the top five pitchers, the highest ERA was 3.5, and I think that belonged to Clay Meredith. And interesting that you bring up Lopez. Rule 5 guy from that year was Kevin Lawrence. You know, he kind of disappeared a couple years later, but he had a stellar Rule 5 rookie season for the Padres that year. And if Lopez cracks the roster, there's a good bet he's going to stay on it because they don't keep him if he doesn't. And maybe he's our 2.87 ERA, you know, round one whip this year as a Rule 5 guy.
Yeah.
Anything to add, or shall we advance?
My one thing to add is that I do have reservations about just that sexy player who AJ keeps too long. He is the Mateo, the Javi Guerra, and Lopez is kind of part of my concern, and also Honeywell. It's the folks, because Honeywell has to pass through waivers if we decide not to keep him. And there's a chance that AJP is just like, I don't want to pass him through waivers. And so he's willing to neglect our winning potential in order to try to keep that player.
Those are both Rays guys, aren't they?
Yes, they are, yeah. And Ray's like sexy tools too, and so does AJP. So,
well, I'm just going to repeat something I said many years ago, many times on this podcast, and thought I would not have to say in the 2020s. If you're keeping a Rule 5 player, you're probably not a contender. If you're keeping two Rule 5 players, you're definitely not a contender. So the idea of this Padres team keeping a Rule 5 player is kind of silly to me. And only AJ, right, would be like, yeah, this team's good, but what we need is this guy that, you know, Tampa made a mistake, and I'm going to – my dick gets so hard when I've got a guy throwing 98, you know, that used to be a Tampa Ray, and now he's wearing Padres pinstripes. You know, I just don't – I don't see it, guys. I just don't see it.
I would love to make a bet with you that Lopez is on the opening day roster.
Done.
Whatever. Gentleman's bet.
What are the stakes? Yeah, what are the stakes?
Gentleman's bet. We can settle it later, but okay. I would love to make that bet. He had a 14 Ks per nine last year and is a lefty that throws over 95. That is AJ Preller's type. That is.
All right. Beverage of choice at location of choice next time we're in the same physical location.
Deal. I will do it. Deal.
Outstanding. I can't wait to win this bet.
for $300 million payroll team. You're not wrong. They should not have any Rule 5 guys.
Shouldn't, but golf. I bet they will. On opening day. Just opening day.
I love this. I love this bet. By the way, I still haven't cashed it in. John Gennaro is still not paid for a North County round of golf for the two of us. For these, Abrams will never be on the opening day. He said he would never be on the roster last year before he was traded. He was on the roster opening day. So
I think it should be Madeira now.
That's a good point. I think so too. I mean, with that sweet, sweet Yahoo money.
All Johns are cheap. That's what I want to put forth.
All right, let's get into our final topic. I think it's an exciting topic. It's a juicy topic, and it's the WBC. The World Baseball Classic is back. The last time it was supposed to happen, we had COVID. It didn't happen. Now it's here. And of all the teams in baseball, the Padres will be one of the most represented teams in the World Baseball Classic. As of the writing of a Dennis Lynn Think piece on this, these players are confirmed Padres playing in the WBC. Four Dominicanos. Manny Machado, of course, Juan Soto, Nelson Cruz is the GM of the Dominican Republic. I don't know if you guys saw that. So he's on the team. Boomstick will put himself on the team.
It's also an Luis all shortstop guy. I mean, that team's got 10 shortstops on it, too.
And an 11th that is unavailable because of a steroid suspension, or else Tatis would be on that team. So four Padres on. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just saying too soon, Craig, too soon.
Yeah, sorry. Well, hey, never too soon. Xander Bogaerts will play for the Netherlands. We don't have to really worry about that. He'll play for the Netherlands in the group stage. Then he'll be back in Peoria. He'll be gone for a week. Yu Darvish will be the ace of the Japanese team, which is expected to be one of the best teams in the WBC. So, and they are training in Japan. We'll talk a little bit more about the training situation, but you could miss the most time of any of the Padres participants. Ha-Sung Kim, of course, will be on Team Korea. Nabil Crismat will be on Team Colombia. And I guess Seth Lugo might be on Team Puerto Rico. Nick Martinez, we mentioned, out for Team USA. Morejon, Team Cuba, that also a possibility. He has to make the team. But if Lugo and Morejon made it, then you would be talking about 10 Padres being away for most of March for the World Baseball Classic.
Well, this is an event I'm stoked about, so I really don't mind. And digging in on it, it doesn't seem to hurt hitters at all. If anything, it actually seems to benefit hitters a tiny bit. And we've got some pretty good hitters that are going to be playing in this thing. According to, what was it? I think it was Bleacher Report from one of the previous ones. They had a thing about how hitters do better, pitchers tend to do worse coming out of it, even though it's, you know, 15 innings or whatever. What little data they have on it has indicated that it hurts pitchers in their season a tiny bit. It's not a ton, but it's a little bit, which may, you know, all the more reason that I'm happy Martinez is staying home. And Japan's got another guy on their team pitching that's pretty darn good there, Craig.
Oh, a future Padre?
A deadline edition Padre for every prospect in the top 30, as well as, you know, Hodads.
Hey, listen, Eggy Rosario and Hodads should be enough. Why is Orange County getting so greedy? We're giving them a fine burger establishment and a fine, fine infielder. John, let me lay out a couple of the basics here just to set the baseline for discussion. Right. And then let's talk about it. WBC players are under a different reporting rule than other Major League Baseball players. All players who are going to be in the WBC have to report by February 13th. Pitchers and catchers report, you know, traditionally the day after that. But Manny Machado has to be there on the 13th. Juan Soto has to be there on the 13th because they need to have time in their camps before splitting up. There will be international camps, right? Team Cuba will have a camp. Team Netherlands will have a camp. Team Italy will have a camp. However, those camps will be populated by non-40-man roster players for the most part. Those camps are really for guys who aren't part of MLB teams. The MLB players will train with their teams. I saw this. I looked for two different spots today, guys, to confirm this. WBC players will be in their club teams training camps right up until the tournament. So they'll probably leave a week before or a few days before the tournament begins to gather those teams together. But the tournament, which is March 8th to March 21st, that's really when guys are going to be gone. You could see Padre players still with the Padres all the way up to like March 3rd, March 4th. And then go to their WBC teams, get together, have a couple cocktails, and then boom, they're ready to play. So while I think all of us were thinking about disruption
right? In terms of this is the most important year. You want to have this club together. You want to have the clubhouse together. You don't want disruption. There's going to be disruption. You know, like 40% of the 25-man roster is going to be somewhere else during the middle of spring training. You're going to see way too much of an Azokar angled doll outfield in spring training. It's going to be almost every single day. But John, I don't think it's going to kill this team's chemistry.
I for sure do not think that it's going to kill the team chemistry. In fact, I think at being Manny Machado, being Juan Soto, being Nelson Cruz, I actually don't know if Nelson Cruz is going to get significant at-bats. I would imagine he probably will get some at-bats. Either way, the competition of the thing is going to bring them up early because there's no way that they want to lose to Puerto Rico. There's no way they want to lose to the USA. So they're going to take it seriously, I think, from jump. And that taking it seriously from jump is, I think, an advantage for our team overall in that I think that our first 20 games are our games that I want to get through successfully because our first 20 games are without Tatis and are also like almost exclusively difficult games. Maybe not difficult, but at least competitive games. We play a lot of teams that are interdivisional or vying for a playoff spot with us. So I want to get off to a good start. And having Manny and Soto just be like, we're in it. We want to win because we want to represent our country. It's an important thing to me. I think that is underrepresented in terms of how important that is. There's no way the Dominican Republic does not want to win this World Baseball Classic. There's just no way. They do. They want to be the victors. This is a sport that is competitive. They want to win. Not only that, but like they're going to challenge other teams in a manner that represents the Dominican Republic, which is valuable, not just to them, but to our team, because we have a lot of Dominican Republic representation. We have Manny Soto, Cruz, Luis Garcia. Tatis is part of that representation. Talking about free agents going forward, that's important. I think that's important. So every time I've watched the World Baseball Classic, whenever like spring training comes around, I'm used to the manner in which I'm like rooting for teams. And I always root for teams not very hard in March, April. That's just not my zeitgeist. That's not how I usually like root for baseball. But every time it pumps me up in a manner that I wouldn't expect. And I think that that's what's going to happen in a manner that maybe we don't think about. I think that we are going to see Manny and Soto and Nelson Cruz take at bats, and we're going to be like, oh, shit, I really want the Dominican Republic to do well. And I think that's going to carry over to the early part of our season, and I think that's valuable for us as a team.
So sorry, guys. So sorry. I muted myself while I turned off my air conditioner.
Well, it should have been off to begin with. It's
must be nice.
Cold, eh?
You know, the not the the heater, what it's a split unit, it's a mini split. The fans of this show are desperate for this show to not get any more, you know, it's got to stay lo-fi, and I'm here to give the people what they want.
you took banter seriously, mate.
I'm here to give the people what they want. So, World Baseball Classic. It seems to vary in how important it is to the fans, seemingly every other time it's up. And this one has some cool things going for it. It got skipped. Just had the World Cup of Soccer, so people are kind of familiar with international competition and wanting to see countries succeed. And there's a lot of excitement for it this go around. And I think that's going to just help our guys, especially the DR team. Manny and Soto got to know each other over a playoff run. And both of them stepped up in the playoffs. They're going to want to perform for their country. I feel nothing but good things off of this WBC. And I know guys get hurt every year. Seth Lugo hurt himself, you know, kind of infamously during the 2017 one. But yeah, I want to see these guys wearing their country's colors.
All right. Just a couple other things on this. I think we're all excited for this. Chris, I know you and I have talked about this. Like, we're gonna talk about WBC. We might even do some post game shows for some Dominican games, because I feel like that's Team Padres. We'll figure it out. We'll suss it out as we go along. But it's so exciting. It's so fun to have real baseball competition in March. I just remember that more than anything from 2017 was that feeling of excitement that here's a real game going on, as opposed to the games that PHT listeners famously know I do not pay attention to, spring training baseball. I really like to not watch those games. When you talk about biggest question mark, to me, Yu Darvish is at the top of the list of that, because he is our most important starter that is at risk, so to speak. I mean, Luis Garcia, Nabil Crismat, Seth Lugo, I'm not really that worried about it. And Rafi Cantor doing some great work behind the scenes for us here on the PHT. Put together some best case, kind of middle case, worst case scenarios of what happened coming out of 2017. Just to remind you, or at least out of the World Baseball Classic, to remind you of the range of possibilities. So, for example, Marcus Stroman pitched for Team USA in 2017, pitched the 15 innings that seems to be the innings limit for guys in the WBC, and then went on to have his best year. 201 innings pitched, a 3.09 ERA, over almost 3.5 F-WAR on the season. Stroman was terrific. Didn't feel it, didn't affect him at all. Seth Lugo pitched 15 innings, WBC for Puerto Rico, 2017. Tied his career best in innings pitched, but it was kind of mediocre. 4.71 ERA, 1.6 F-WAR. Daisuke
Matsuzawa. He got hurt. Yeah. He got hurt that year. He missed time.
Yeah. The dice crapped out because he pitched too much in the WBC. He was the MVP of the WBC, and then he was crap basically the rest of his career.
No, Seth Lugo got hurt. He missed time in the beginning of that 2017 year with a strain ligament.
Well, so did Daisuke. No, but the point being, yeah, you're right. You risk more injury. You risk more injury for these starters. And John, I think the biggest reason is because these guys don't give it even close to their all in spring training. They give it 50% in spring training. All of a sudden, you can't help it. You put on your team's colors. They're banging the drum in the outfield. Everyone's going crazy. You give it 100%. It's just, it's human nature.
I agree. That being said, no data that I've been shown it's all small sample size, but no data has been purported that shows that pitchers are more likely to have a poor season after they participated in the World Baseball Classic. That being said, it's a small sample size. If I were concerned about anything for my own thought process, it would be relievers being overworked early in the season and then not being able to participate in the regular season in the same manner because they were never worked in a slow, you know, precipitous process in the same manner that you would in a spring training season. So Nick Martinez was the person that I was most nervous about because he was not only going to have a different, you know, workup schedule, but he was also going to be a reliever while trying to be a starting pitcher. He gave that up. He did that. I think that's a good sign for the Padres as a whole. Everybody knows we're trying to win right now. Him giving up his chance for national acclaim so that he can like most benefit the Padres. Probably there's other Padres that feel the same way. You know, they just want to do whatever's the best to try to win a national, like a championship, win the World Series. That's not a manner in which most Padres teams will have acted in the past. You know, most Nick Martinez's would have participated. He knows that this is a serious season. This is not play around and make sure that, you know, and he took sacrifice to do it. He sacrificed his ability to take part in a possible championship for the United States of America in order to make sure that he is most ready for a Padres season. That's not the same thing as anything that I've witnessed as a Padres fan. It's a different season to me. I am excited for that new thought process. I think it's going to be a good sign for things to come.
Last thing I'll note is just that Ha-Seong Kim is going to be our second baseman, but he's going to be Korea's shortstop. So, you know, if you want to kvetch over that, if you want to clutch your pearls, you can say he's going to miss 2 weeks of second base rotation. I'm not worried about it. Ha-Seong Kim's great wherever you put him. He'll be fine. Okay.
Last question thing, the king.
Yeah, never question my sweet prince. He's going to be absolutely fine. last question for the group. Who are we rooting for? Who are you pulling for? I mean, we are Americans. Should we be rooting for Team USA?
USA's got a really stacked lineup. You know, it's a really good, exciting team. I'm a little, you know, I think they may have made the wrong decision in center field going with Mike Trout over Trent Grisham, but time will tell.
Only time will tell.
Only time will tell. I'm rooting for great baseball in March, just like you said. I'm rooting for meaningful, intense, you know, fun games at a time when we're not used to it. I'm going to go Team USA, baby. America, because it's where I'm from.
America. John?
Danny Monzon is the Puerto Rican player that played for the Minnesota Twins and brought my Puerto Rican side of my family to America. And therefore, I root for Puerto Rico always first. Secondary, I will root for the Dominican Republic because I want a Dominican Republic stronghold on our team, which we kind of are already starting to have. I just want them all on our team. And I think that would be valuable for us. And then third, United States.
Yeah, Dominican Republic for me all the way, because I am only looking at this from the rubric of what could help the Padres the most. And I think Juan Soto and Manny Machado celebrating a championship, Nelson Cruz GMing their team to a championship, showing that front office leadership that we know he's going to bring to San Diego. I'm excited for that. I'd like to see that happen and then that just be repeated in October, where these guys are celebrating once again, jumping into each other's arms.
I just want our country to come together again over something, and I feel like the World Baseball Classic is the ticket that gets the hands holding across the country.
Well, that's it. Yeah, hands across America. It's happening on March 21st, right before first pitch.
Off baseball.
Right, that's it. Yep. That's it for today's Padres Hot Tub. John Precota, thank you so much, brother. Appreciate you being on. I know we'll have you on again real soon.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one. Have a good week. Go Padres.
Really great, Chris. John. Nice to meet you, man.
I'll just say, you know, Chris, thank you for being here, too.
Hat tip. Tip of hat.
You know, I'm going to be so nice to John. John, it's incredible having you. Chris, also present.
Damn it, Chris.
Yeah. Smell you later, Craig.
Padres Hot Tub. Have an incredible week.